Before we can go any further, we've got to talk about observability bias. It's one of the most pernicious forces that limits our impact as instructional leaders. So, what is observability bias? In the last section, we introduced the metaphor of the iceberg and talked about how when we get into a classroom and observe teachers teaching, what we can observe, the mechanics that are visible to us, is only about 10% of what's really going on in teacher practice. If we think of teacher practice as being like an iceberg, 90% of what really matters is hidden beneath the surface, and it plays out over different time frames. Some things that we can observe in just a moment, and some things that play out like relationships with students and families over the course of the entire school year. So observability bias is based directly on that challenge, that when we get into a classroom, we don't see everything. We just see the tip of the iceberg. And here is what it is specifically. So observability bias is the tendency of instructional leaders to focus on whatever's easiest for us to observe, right? Rather than the key decisions that teachers are making. What we're essentially doing with observability bias is we're treating what's easy for us to observe as if it's what matters most, right? And we're kind of confusing measurability or observability or ease of documentation with substance and impact. And sometimes we need to recognize that what we should be focusing on might actually be fairly hard for us to observe and gather evidence of. Let's look at an example that probably is going to sound a little bit familiar. The visible teaching behavior might be that you see a teacher asking lower level factual recall questions. And you might be thinking about some shared expectations around depth of knowledge or Bloom's taxonomy. And you might be thinking, well, we really want our teachers to be asking higher order questions, right? Don't we? So the visible, observable, documentable behavior is that the teacher is asking lower level factual recall questions. The invisible aspect of that is the teacher thinking, right? What's the teacher's purpose for asking questions at this point in the lesson? Where is the class within the unit? And what misconceptions do students currently have? What information is the teacher trying to get? Or what purpose is the teacher trying to serve with this line of questioning? Those issues are invisible to us if all we're doing is popping in to observe. We don't have insight into those questions until we talk with the teacher. So, if we allow our practice of instructional leadership to be unduly influenced by observability bias, what we might do is something like say, hey, you know what? I observed that you were asking a lot of lower level, lower order, kind of basic questions, and I'd really like to see you asking more higher order questions, right? That's a big priority this year. You should be asking higher order questions. And we might give feedback like that, or give a suggestion that the teacher ask a higher order question. But that feedback will miss the mark if the teacher's purpose was better served by asking those lower level factual questions. Maybe they were reviewing for a quiz. Maybe they were just trying to get everyone on the same page before they got into a higher order thinking kind of activity. So the whole iceberg instructional leadership practice would be to get into that thinking that we need insight into to really understand the practice that we observed. Sometimes we need to deliberately give ourselves the opportunity to access teacher thinking by simply asking, you know, here's what I observed. Tell me about that. Talk to me about that. We need to give ourselves the opportunity to get that invisible teacher thinking into the open so that we can talk about what really matters, not just the part that we observed. You've probably heard the old story of the person who lost their keys and they're looking around kind of under a street lamp and somebody comes along and says, hey, you know, did you lose something or, you know, can I help you find something? And the person who's looking says, yeah, I lost my keys. And they just continue looking around. And the other person says, well, you know, where did you last see them? Did you drop them right here? Like, I don't see anything. Did you drop them right here? And the other person says, well, no, I dropped them over there across the street, but the light's a lot better right here. Right? And that idea that we should just look where the light is best, not where the keys actually are, I think pervades the practice of instructional leadership. Too often, we look at those surface level teaching behaviors because they're easy for us to observe, not because they're where we really need to be looking. And observability bias can actually manifest itself in the tools that we use. If we use things like simplistic observation checklists, like I want to see this, I want to see that, and we just kind of check off, you know, was this element present or not? Or if we have more complicated forms that allow us to score using different rubrics, if those elements that we're looking for are not really at the heart of the cognitive task that teachers are engaged in when they're teaching, then we're going to end up with various distortions. And our feedback conversations are not going to be as impactful as they could if we shone a light on where the keys actually are, where the teacher's decision-making is actually focused. So there are a lot of distortions that come in when we try to use the instructional leadership process for things that it's not as good a fit for. For example, the idea of inter-rater reliability is often one that comes up. I think it's a good issue to think about when you are training administrators. You know, in an administrator prep program, I think it could be a good exercise to have everybody watch a clip of the same video of a lesson and take notes and come to similar conclusions based on their knowledge of good instruction. I think that's a worthy goal, but I don't think it's helpful in terms of the day-to-day supervision and evaluation and coaching and improvement of teachers and their decision making. Because what happens is, if we treat inter-rater reliability as the goal, we will treat just the tip of the iceberg as the only relevant source of information. See, if you're going to get inter-rater reliability, all of your raters have to have access to the same evidence, right? But the video clip or the short observation, maybe you bring six people in and have them all sit at the back of the classroom and observe in person. Those people who are observing but not talking with the teacher are not going to have access to the evidence they truly need, evidence that only comes from the conversation. So I think we have to be really careful about allowing our work to be distorted by observability bias. We have got to find ways to see the whole iceberg, keeping in mind that parts of that iceberg may not be visible to us within a single lesson. If you think about the way your teacher evaluation criteria are written, they're written most likely to evaluate teachers on their overall practice over the course of the year. They're not, you know, how does the teacher hold the bat? How does the teacher swing the bat? How does the teacher plant their feet, get a good hit, right? They're not those kind of in the moment things. They're long-term responsibilities. And if you look at the Danielson framework, it's definitely written that way to reflect the fact that teacher evaluation is supposed to reflect practice over the course of the entire year. So if we treat an individual observation or an individual moment in an observation as a snapshot of that overall, you know, kind of a freeze frame of that overall practice, we're going to get some distortions that make our job a lot harder than it needs to be. And especially if we're trying to achieve inter-rater reliability, and I think there may be cases where we need multiple observers. If we have someone who is maybe getting a negative evaluation, maybe being placed on probation, I understand there are cases where we want different observers to observe and come to similar conclusions. But for the most part, simply observing is not going to give us enough evidence to achieve anything like we might call inter-rater reliability. And if the key elements of practice are not even directly visible without a conversation, then we're really off track when it comes to the nature of the task that we face as instructional leaders. So if observability bias is such a big problem, what can we do about it? I believe the antidote to observability bias is to adopt the insider's view of teacher practice. In other words, we need to be willing to look as deeply and think as deeply about teacher practice as teachers do themselves. And often we don't do that. Often, if we're honest with ourselves, we're focused on what's easy for us. We're focused on what's directly observable. We don't really want the teacher to be able to talk their way out of something that we thought was not okay. We want to allow our judgments to stand, even if those judgments are not based on that kind of whole iceberg perspective. And that's not going to work for us. We really need to see that whole iceberg. So how do we shed light on that whole iceberg? How can we see everything that matters when it comes to teacher practice? We can't directly observe those beneath the surface elements, but we can get some insight from teacher talk. We can get teachers talking about their thinking if we have two things. if we have, first of all, shared evidence. So we do have that tip of the iceberg that we did see, or maybe we have some artifacts, we have student work or student assessments. You know, we have some evidence that we can talk about. And then we have a conversation using the shared language of an instructional framework, which we'll talk about in subsequent modules of this program. For now, pull out your journal and reflect on these two questions. When in my career have I been the victim of observability bias, right? This has probably happened to you where an observer came in, didn't have a lot of time, didn't have a lot of context or knowledge of what was going on in your class or what that unit was about or what the standards were or what your students needed at that moment, and judge what they saw above the surface based on their pre-existing knowledge and their assumptions. Has that ever happened to you? What were some of the consequences of that? How did that play out? Think about that in your journal. And then ask yourself, when have I made the mistake of giving a teacher feedback that was influenced by observability bias? When have I done that myself, when I didn't have the full perspective, I couldn't see the whole iceberg, and I gave feedback just on those surface level behaviors that might have been misguided? Think about that, do some writing in your journal, and I will see you in the next section.